Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google Plus, Neil Haley, and also on Periscope, at TotalTutor. And when I'm recording so many television shows in one day, this is my sixth guest. I have one more to go and almost a four-hour TV studio appearance. But I'm definitely saving one of the best for last, but who knows how it's going to go in the lineup for television. But I'm excited to welcome the program from the CBS TV show hit series Scorpion, Walter O'Brien. Walter, thanks for calling, man. And you've had a very interesting storied life getting to this point and then seeing what the TV show's done. Isn't that true?
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate you making the time.
Absolutely. And so, growing up, you probably never knew that you would have a story idea that ended up with a hit TV show, right? For sure.
No, definitely wasn't expecting it to go this far, but I'm glad that it did. I seem to have spent my life avoiding going back to farming and also trying to not be bored. And I have an insatiable appetite for activity, so the TV show certainly keeps me not bored.
Tell me your technical, you're talking about farming. Tell me about your technical background now, Walter, how that started becoming a techie. What kind of intrigued you?
Well, I was born and raised on a farm in Ireland, dairy farmer's son, and I didn't really enjoy farming in the rain. It didn't appeal to me. Okay. And I was an odd kid, and I had scored a 197 on an IQ test, which statistically made me the fifth highest IQ in the world. So I then got access to the Gifted Children's Society and got my hands on a computer and became self-taught in computers initially. Later on, I got degrees in computer science and artificial intelligence from Sussex. And by 13, I'd hacked into NASA and stolen the shuttle blueprints. And by 16, I'd hacked the Bank of England. And that seemed much more interesting and fascinating than farming in the rain.
It definitely does, yeah. But you're so intelligent, you probably are like, I'm blown away to talk to probably the smartest guy I've ever talked to in my life.
Well, thank you. But a lot of people mix up smartness with IQ or intelligence. It's not quite the same thing. It just means my brain fires neurons quicker and absorbs glucose more, but it doesn't mean I know how to use it. Smart is knowing how to use it. But there's a lot of things I'm not good at, and there's a few things that come intuitively. And I'm very left-brained, so logic and programming and technology come intuitively, but you don't want me cooking, dancing, or singing anything.
Well, But doing this stuff and breaking into all these computer systems and different things like this, this wasn't really a good way to become a celebrity, is it? And well, no. This is not the way to kind of say, okay, we're gonna say perfect job for you, right? By doing that was, you were tweaking with things, but people didn't like you too much at that time, right? When you broke into those places.
Correct. No, I mean, I was heavily bullied in both school and in high school. I didn't really start being accepted until I got to university level, and I was with people kind of at my own cognitive speed. But even a TV show, if we made a TV show just about hacking, I think people would tune out, or it would be a documentary on the Discovery Channel, as opposed to one of the number one TV shows on the air. And the reason for it is a phenomenon I discovered early on. I started a company at 13, and I hired my friends, who were all prodigies.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow.
And I realized very quickly that, in general, the higher their IQ, the lower their EQ. EQ being emotional quotient, common sense, social skills, bedside manner, street smarts. And the higher someone's IQ academically, the harder it is for them to relate to people around them. So they're worse at the EQ. So your IQ doesn't change, but you can change your EQ. And by changing your EQ a little bit, it affects your whole life. Cornell University came out with a study recently saying 85% of someone's success is their EQ, 15% their IQ. So I should have been screwed.
But you didn't, because I guess, now think about when you said hacking, and just now we're hearing about all the hacking in our governments happening on a regular basis. Walter, you should be talking to the federal government right now saying, what are you guys doing that your email's being hacked so easily and stuff like that? That was it like just a fun little thing for you to say, let me see if I can break into this system? This is before, think of the days of War Games and when... The movie War Games and how he broke into the computer system of the government and that one thing. But the hacking idea, did you say I'm just by just tweaking and playing around with things, you figured out how to hack different programs and get into different systems?
Well, let's see. There's a few questions in that. Firstly, I spent a good portion of last month in Washington at all the various three-letter agencies dealing with a proposal of asking Scorpion, since I'm now, I think, the most renowned hacker in the U.S. in terms of the 26 million fans.
Yes.
To build something Scorpion couldn't hack into. Kind of like a Manhattan Project 2.0.
Okay.
Where we take all the best techniques we know and put them all in one box and then prove that we can't get into it and that all the hacks that have affected the government in the last 3 years, we backtest those and prove that those wouldn't have worked. Effectively building the first bank vault for data. And I think right now, the reason data is being stolen and people are being hacked is they're storing the data under their mattress, to use the analogy of money, and it's easy to steal. But if we actually built them a Wells Fargo, it might get a little harder to steal. So that's one piece. In terms of learning hacking, hacking is really just a mentality. It's a mindset. It's seeing what's not there rather than seeing what's there. And it starts with understanding intuitively how computers work and how they're coded and how programmers write code. Then it's easy for you to say, I bet the programmer never thought of this. I bet he didn't account for that. I bet if I make this variable blank, it'll probably crash this security server. And you're basically seeing what's not there because you can see the whole universe. You can see what they didn't think of.
So that's good that the government's contacting you. I'm glad to hear that and that they're using your expertise in so many ways. And I want to get to the show Scorpion in the second segment, but I'm very, very interested in the fact of how people are able to look at computer programming and code and figure it out. And once you understand code because of it's like a foreign language, then it's just like, how can I maneuver through it, as you were telling me? That's interesting. So computer code, is it like the beautiful mind for you, Walter? You look at computer code and it kind of just turns out English for you?
I actually did technical draftsmanship for 3 years at college, and that's kind of like architecture.
Right.
And it taught me 3D visualization, which I use a lot when it comes to coding. Where I can see it in my head, almost like the cogwheels in a clock or a watch.
Oh my!
And I can go inside of it and kind of look at it from different angles to find a way in. A good analogy, I think, would be a mechanic looking at a car. You know, a mechanic is an expert on Chevy trucks, and you drive up to him in a Ford truck, and he pops the hood, and you tell him, "How would you disable this truck?" Well, he knows there's a fuel pump somewhere. That fuel pump has electricity to it. Right. If he can find that wire and cut it, then it won't pump any fuel. No fuel being pumped, the engine stops running. And he doesn't necessarily have to have ever seen that truck before, but he knows the basics of how trucks work. So he knows what he's looking for, and he knows roughly where it should be and what it should be connected to. And he's probably got 20 ways of disabling that truck. Definitely. Or at least the sprigs.
I mean, I can't. Fascinating. Fascinating to say the least about how you're able to figure all that stuff out. And you said you started your company at 13 years old, hired specific people, and part of the whole company's goal is to help protect others from someone like you, right? Correct?
Correct. It's basically a home for the mentally enabled. It's an orphanage for smart people because they don't fit in anywhere else in society. And the EQ stuff I was talking about, we actually went out and deliberately hired people who have high EQ, psychologists and elementary school teachers. And we call them the super nanny. So they babysit the geniuses and the customers. Now we have the best communicators working with the best thinkers. And a lot of the best thinkers suck at marketing, branding, sales, yes, legal, taxes, accounting, all these areas they consider superfluous. So we have groups and companies that do those things very well. So we're kind of like an incubator for smart people where they can just come in and say, you're just paid to think. You just do the thing that you're good at, and all the other paperwork someone else will take care of.
Interesting. And so based on your company, Scorpion, in so many ways, tell me, I guess, the growth of that company before the whole idea, and then we'll get to the story of how this whole CBS thing came about. So you started the company, and tell us about that growth.
So we started a company, and when we started, it was kind of like Geek Squad. I was just running around on bicycles because we couldn't afford cars. We were under 16. And we were just fixing bad floppy disks and printers and backing people's stuff up and so on. So it was, you know, non-glamorous work. Then as those companies got to know us and they grew, because this was 1988, they started getting into supply chain management and shop floor planning and shipping containers and, you know, e-commerce systems and credit card processing. And we just grew with them and got very good at any big mess, any system where you lose billions of dollars per hour if the systems are offline.
Okay.
So we did that. And then an unusual thing happened. Our high net worth customers that privately own some of the businesses, and we had 44 billionaires and five royal families as clients, they started asking us to solve problems that weren't technical, like their daughter got kidnapped or their mom has throat cancer and they us to research all non-FDA approved solutions outside the U.S. or their son has anorexia. Can we look up all food that's high in fat and calories but has no, is odorless and tasteless? Can we choose a winning racehorse based on his DNA? Can we make their book a New York Times bestseller by figuring out how that ranking system works? So people started hiring us for this stuff, and we opened up a business called ConciergeUp.com. Because normally you concierge down, things that are too simple to do yourself. Now you can concierge up, things that are too complicated to do yourself. So we tell people, if you want to search something, type it in Google. If you want it to happen, type it in Concierge Hub. And when what happened was we started running out of geniuses.
Okay.
So I got the geniuses together and I said, now I have a funded problem. How do I find more geniuses? And they said, if you write a book, the millennials won't read it. If you make a movie, they'll forget your name in 6 months. But if you replace CSI as the number one show on the air for the next 10 years, not only will the geniuses come find you, but all the 12-year-olds out there will grow up studying computer science and artificial intelligence, and in 10 years come and join the actual company. And so that's what we did.
Oh, wow. So, Walter, when we get back, we're going to talk more about that. And so that's only a genius would come up with that idea, Walter. So, I mean, different things wouldn't work. And you got, again, your research team, it must be phenomenal because they went and came up with all these different ideas, and you're definitely the think tank to come to. You're watching The Neil Haley Show. When we get back, more with Walter O'Brien from the hit TV show Scorpion. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to The Neil Haley Show on the Toll Education Network. Again, tolltutor.net for more information. Twitter, tolltutor. Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Toll Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google+, and on Periscope at Toll Tutor. And I'm with Walter O'Brien from the hit TV CBS show Scorpion, and so you were going to replace CSI. So when people told you that idea, were you hesitant to say that really could happen?
Well, we knew the odds. We knew the number of scripts to get reported to or sent into a studio, all the way to getting on the air and then staying on the air,
right,
is probably a million to one shot. So, but so is taking a startup technology company all the way to IPO, which we've done before as well. So basically, we're like, okay, how do we reduce the odds of that? Well, if we took the producers of Transformers, Spider-Man, and Star Trek, put them with the director of Fast and the Furious, and use the writers from Sopranos, Prison Break, and Hostages.
Oh, my gosh.
And put them all together. That might increase our odds a little bit.
It would.
And so that's what we did. And, you know, why pay for a marketing and branding campaign when you can have one that pays you? So it made a lot of sense. And we needed those writers because, again, if we made it all technically accurate, it would be a really boring show.
Yes.
So we needed someone to mix in car chases, explosions, romance, guns, and sense of humor, while still carrying the message across that it's cool to be smart and that every problem has a solution. So that kids will want to be the next high-tech James Bond. And I would be Q, because I would provide the gadgets to the show. And that's what we did. And it just kept mushrooming from there, and it worked out. And, yeah, we beat NCIS and CSI in the ratings several times now.
Oh. Now, tell us specifically the premise of the show. I have not watched it, Walter. I'm going to definitely go this weekend with my wife and say, okay, it's on DVR, you know, on demand. Let's watch it now. And then I'll have to see if you're connected via social media and say, okay, I finally watched this. CBS is perfect because you got The Big Bang Theory. You got different shows that very highly intelligent, and people watch CBS. So you picked the right station, too. Was that pretty easy as well to know that CBS would be the perfect spot?
They were the number one station. They also had the most family watching.
Okay.
And we became a family event on Mondays. Kids would make their parents sit down and watch it with them and then discuss EQ lessons at the end of the show. And as we said earlier, if EQ is responsible for 85% of your success,
and they don't teach it
in schools, then it's probably a good idea that kids discuss it with their parents as a topic in itself. And the premise of the show is not where we are now as a company, it's how we started. So it rewinds back 20 years, and it shows me and a couple of people who are inspired by real friends of mine who still work with me in the company.
Oh, wow.
And you get to see that how those people sometimes can't see the forest for the trees.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a dysfunctional family of superheroes, so they're likable.
Okay.
And their OCD and germophobia and gambling habits and everything else are an exaggeration of all of our flaws. Everyone has flaws in these areas,
yes,
just with prodigies that's on steroids. And then Catherine McPhee is on the show as a single mom whose son, she thought was autistic, is actually a genius. And she is the normal one teaching them how to relate to the world. So she is the first super nanny.
And that's what you have in your company, as you talked about before. You hire these people to babysit the geniuses that can literally do the work, but yet, if it's relate to light, a deadline, specifically being on time for certain things, or hygiene or certain things, that's what you need the babysitter for.
Somebody has to herd the cats because they don't speak human too well.
I work with Asperger's kids, and I coach one that's in college, and he's so brilliant. Yet giving him the idea of a deadline or certain things like that, and he's like, really? So I understand, especially a major company that millions and millions and millions of dollars or even billions are involved to do that. So when you got all those people together, you really kind of circumvented the system, saying, I'm going to get the most talented people from all these shows that were successful together to help put this together. So you send this project to CBS and different stations. So you really eliminated the odds, but that's a lot of money to start off to pitch these people these ideas, right? and talk to the people from these different shows that have had success to come on board with you.
Right, but Scorpion's one of many companies I own, and we've done $1.3 billion in revenue.
Yeah.
So it was, we had the budget.
You're always looking to grow, right? What's the next thing? So could you, now, so if I would say to you and get your think tank team together, you could come up with any business idea for any company in the world, couldn't you, to grow to the next level?
Correct. Basically, that's the whole point. I'm an affordable Santa Claus for any project over $5,000. I don't charge for my time anymore because I'd be $300,000 an hour and nobody would talk to me.
Yeah.
And my guys average $150 an hour, so they're very affordable. And it's like a retainer at a law firm. You can even get your money back if you don't use it. So if you came to us and said, look, I have this idea, this widget, this gadget, but I'm not a business person, then we have a process called a business in a box, where all the things you need, from your logo to your business card to your website to your eFax number to your pro forma and your business plan and raising funding and finding investors and all of that, we've done it so many times, it's now cut and paste or cookie cutter for us. So rather than you trying to do it for the very first time on your own. So that way, there's 140 different things you got to do when you start a business. And if you do it right, it should only cost you about $500 a month to pay all the fees for those things because you outsource everything on the internet.
Right.
Well, we have that checklist. And that can save you about 2 years of research and bumbling around and paying for the wrong thing when you go to start a business. So a lot of the reason we can help people is not necessarily the genius part. It's more a case of we've already done it 10 times, so we can do it for you the 11th time a lot faster and more efficiently.
So you, and I think it's like you got this idea, you go and talk to this to your team, and then they'll pretty much say, the only way for this idea odds-wise to be successful is to do this, this, and this. The direction you're going down the road won't work, but it doesn't guarantee it, but it reduces the odds, right?
Right. You go from 1 in 1,000,000 chance of success to maybe 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000.
And that has to do a lot with numbers, right, Walter, in ways?
Well, I'm biased. My brain is good with numbers, so I turn the world into a casino, and I calculate the odds of everything. And I'll tell you if it's not worth doing, if the odds don't make sense.
Right.
You know, if you're putting money into an idea and I'm like, you know, this idea is never going to fly unless you have $1 billion behind it. So keep your $5,000 and go home. I just saved you some money.
So when people have lunch with you or dinner and they ask advice like your E.F. Hutton and, back in the day of E.F. Hutton, and people listen and all that stuff, is it hard at times how blunt you are? Flat out say after this isn't going to work. How difficult is it for people with egos to hire your company and say, I know this is going to be great, and yet didn't have outside sources to do it? That's why I think it's fascinating about you, Walter, is literally you're able to cut to the chase.
Correct. Well, look, I'm going to be very honest and straightforward with the customer from the beginning.
Yeah.
And, you know, frankly, we have an no-a-hole policy at the company. So if we're working with someone and they're unrealistic and they fired their last three companies for all the different reasons, and, you know, they don't realize that what they're paying us to do is research. And Einstein said, if we knew what we were doing, we wouldn't call it research, would we?
Right.
Famously. So it's a case of you don't know how to do it or what it costs. So I don't know how to do it or what it costs. We're going to work together and report back every Friday what we've learned and where we're at and decide if we want to go next week or not. That's kind of the best mode of doing this. Trying to lock things into fixed bid just means we don't end up with any product and we both end up in court. And so the whole structure of how we work is very honest from the beginning, and hope that the customer appreciates that. And if they don't, there's plenty of other companies that will lie to them, take their money, and then end up in court arguing over a fixed bid contract where both people agreed on a number for something that they hadn't even got the requirements for yet.
So you said you have a bunch of different businesses, Walter. You still have the whole cybersecurity business. I know you couldn't list them all, so there's a website to find out all the different businesses you're involved in, correct? or meaning like your business?
Well, you can see, if you go to scorpioncomputerservices.com and check what we do, you'll see a lot of our practice areas. There's about 20 practice areas there. And yes, cybersecurity is one of them for people who actually want to be secure, not just pass audit. People who actually want to know if there's legitimate ways into their business. We opened up scorpionstudiosinc.com. Okay. And what we do is the tech advisory work to companies and movies, like the next Spider-Man movie with Sony. And we would help them design everything from weapons to the bad guys' suits to the research for the scripts. And we have other big-name studios that use us for that, where the writers don't want to go off for 3 months and start researching nuclear energy devices, that we can just bring in a nuclear energy expert in 4 hours and give him the language he's looking for. And sometimes they just, the way I phrase it is, nobody remembers the individual James Bond movies, but everyone remembers the gadgets. So if you want to make your movie or your show or your story cooler with gadgets no one's ever seen before, we know what the state-of-the-art gadgets are. And we can make them realistic.
You're always
That's another business that we do.
You're always evolving and probably coming up with a new business, aren't you, Walter?
Whenever it makes sense, we'll spin out a new business. For a lot of our government work now, it's going to get very interesting as we do more and more cyber.
You know what I also find fascinating about this whole story is the best PR for you was Scorpion, and you get paid for it. So what? Go figure. Only geniuses would come up with that, Walter. So I'm impressed, and I can't believe you took 26 minutes to take the time to talk to me. That would be a high price tag for me as well. And I think you're a brilliant man, and congratulations on all your success. And I tell you, I'm going to keep in touch and never know if I want to pick up that phone call and have you back on again to get some free advice. But you're definitely showing me that odds are important before making decisions, and technology and research and having the right team around. Best place again, website for you again?
ScorpionComputerServices.com, or type your funded wish into ConciergeUp.com.
And you have all of your social media links on the website as well, correct?
I'm easy to find, yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. That was Walter O'Brien. And oh my gosh, I just, again, have been amazed. Can't wait to watch Scorpion this weekend now and then have to tweet him out or Facebook or more, send his publicist an email saying, what a genius. You know, people always talk about Donald Trump being a genius. This man was a genius. So great Neil Haley show. See you guys next week. Good day, everyone.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor. Neil S. Haley, Facebook. LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley. Google+, and also on Periscope at TotalTutor. And let the continued interesting celebrity interviews continue today. I've had a strange day. 4 out of 5 interviews I hopefully will complete. But excited to welcome the program from Bravo TV's The People's Couch, Andrew Edgar. Andrew, thanks for calling, and I know you have more than yourself on the line. Am I correct?
Yeah, hey, Neil, how you doing? It's Andrew Egbert. I got Jack, Sam, and Julie with me.
All right, Andrew. Thanks again. So we'll kind of, you can introduce each one of them. But let's go first to the story, Andrew, then we can have other people chime in. Just chime in. That's going to be the best way to do this interview, is just chime in whenever you have any, questions or comments to make about this. So, Andrew, when you first approached for the show, kind of tell us that specific story.
Well, it's kind of interesting. Sam is out. We're out in Los Angeles to help Sam. We have 4 boys, and Sam's our 3rd. And we found a submission for the TV show, looking for people who are into pop culture, who like watching TV. We had no idea what the show was or what channel it was on, and we just submitted for the audition off the casting site. And we went through several interview processes, Skype interviews, at-home interviews, all sorts of different ways. It was a pretty long process, and then all of a sudden we found ourselves on the show. It was kind of interesting, the whole process, but it was really fun and exciting for us.
See, that's so interesting, the process. And were you familiar with the show at all, Andrew, before kind of submitting yourself out there?
No, not at all, because the show hadn't existed before. Now, the show was basically somewhat of a – the same production company that had it over in England, the show's called Gogglebox. And it's the same type of idea where different households watch television and react to the TV shows. So it was a new concept for America, and we had no idea the show even existed before we actually were told what the show was.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, it was really, really wild and interesting, but – it's been very fun, and as a family, we just had the best time doing it.
Now, Andrew, so you had no familiarity. Did you ever submit your family to other reality television shows before this?
Yeah, we actually been on several. I mean, we're definitely not a one-trick pony when it comes to certain reality shows. We've done we did a show for Disney called Code 9, which is a prank show. We did an amazing prank on Julie. She's still trying to recover from that from a few years ago. And we did a show for CBS, am I right?
Yeah, right.
CBS. Recipe Rehab on CBS, which was really great. We also were guest bartenders on Andy Cohen's Watch What Happens Live early this year, back in January. Julie and I have done some game show appearances. So we really try to do as much as we can. You know, when you're out in Los Angeles, you might as – you know, when in Rome, do what the Romans do, right? So in L.A., try to do what the actors do. Just hang out and have some fun. But we've done a lot of different things. We've done some commercials for TV.
This is Sam speaking now. I just want to say we love doing things together as a family, too. So that's why we do all these projects where we can all work together, because we just love spending time together.
See, and that's great. And that's great that you said that, the family thing. But so you kind of put yourself out there, Andrew. Would you say, have you ever acted before? What makes you kind of put yourself out to different reality television shows to kind of pitch yourself and stuff like that? What's your experience, Andrew?
Well,
get that, yeah.
Well, we're not – I mean, the only trained actor is Sam. And Sam is incredibly fantastic at his craft. So, you know, when you do reality, you're just playing yourself. And it's pretty easy for us to play ourselves because we are who we are. And I can't say that, you know, we're definitely not – I mean, I'll speak for myself and – Julie and can speak for herself and Jack, but we're not necessarily actors, if you want to call us that. We're just ourselves playing ourselves, and so we try to find things that fall into that category.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting perspective for sure. And putting yourself out
like,
there,
like we know who we are. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
We know who we are. Like, I can't remember like more than one line of dialogue if you put it in front of me. My memorization is gone. Jack's like a trap with that stuff. But you know,
that's great.
Sam and Jack are great with that. But Julie and I, we can't. You know, I have trouble remembering phone numbers half the time. So let alone script. So as long as you can put a camera in front of me, when the light's on, I turn on and just be myself. I can give you as much material as you want.
That's great. Now let's talk to some other family members about this. Seeing yourself on television and put yourself out there with your friends and friends and being at school and different things. How do they respond when you say, "Hey, I'm doing this show," or "Check us out on television"? What I guess being in, as you said, in California, it's you're used to this stuff, right?
Yeah. At this point, I'm going to put Julie on because she's our social media queen. So she takes care of all that stuff for us. So she's going to answer on how it's affected her. Is that okay?
Sure.
Yeah, here she is.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, good, good. So the question I wanted to ask was basically with involving specifically putting yourself out there and the response of the audience, different things like that, how are the family members dealing with it, especially, you know, going to school or work or wherever? Kind of explain that whole thing to us, and you saying you're being the social media guru for the family.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a lot of fun, and you know, I mean, put it this way, we tape the show from our bedroom, and no one else is in there but us, and so you kind of forget about the fact that the rest of the world is watching us on TV when it's on. And it's kind of surreal, you know, and you know, our friends and family, it's kind of like, oh, my God, you know, wow, you're on TV. And, you know, they get a kick out of it, and it's cool and all that. And but I don't know. You just kind of forget about that after a while. At first, I think it was kind of like a freak out. But now it's just, you know, it's just kind of like a regular everyday thing. And I think friends and family think it's pretty cool. And as far as social media, you know, it's a big part of it. And, you know, everyone likes to stay relevant and continue that. And I don't know, Sam seems to want to say something.
And I mean, we do also get recognized quite often when we go out. Yeah. And it's really nice when people come up to us and they tell us that, you know, it's nice to see a nice family dynamic on TV. So that's always really nice to hear because, they can definitely relate to our family and, just being together, spending good quality time.
Wait, this is Julie again. This is what I was going to say. It's just that, you know, we're a family. You know, we do this together as a family, and so we have a lot of fans that are families, and we like to represent families, a typical American family. And, you know, so it's really nice when you have people out there, fans that are giving you shout outs or that recognize you when you're walking by, and they tell you how much they love your family and how it's brought
exactly.
their family closer together by watching our family. And, you know, they love the closeness of our family, and it's brought, you know, them with, you know, watching TV back to, you know, with their kid again. And that makes you feel really good, you know?
Well, it definitely does make you feel really good and things like that. And, Julie, what I would say is, well, first, your husband has this idea, say, I'm going to go ahead and do this. I'm going to get us on reality television and the first types of pitches before the People's Couch. Are you the kind of people, is it because living in California that everyone's used to having the opportunity to pitch production companies and always have these ideas, that it wasn't embarrassing in a way to say we're gonna put ourselves out there to the public in certain other things? Or is it something like, hey, this is perfect, this is something we want to do, our son really wants to act, this is a great way for some PR for him to get himself out there and get him
I mean, I got to tell you, when we came out here, that wasn't even on my radar. I didn't come out here trying to do any of this. This wasn't about me at all. I was not... You know, this was not what I was looking to do. I was just coming out here to support my son and spend time together as a family. But this opportunity just kind of dropped into our lap, and then it was like, you know, hey, you know, why not take advantage of an opportunity? But it wasn't like I was seeking out to be on TV. That was not my goal.
That's what I'm saying. So what was your response? Whose idea was it? Yours or Andrew's?
Oh, here. It was Andrew's. Hold on.
Well, yeah, so I hope it's okay that we're going back and forth with the phone.
That's fine. It's fine. I can juggle this. I've interviewed the entire Wiggles cast before. I've interviewed a lot of different people. So it's
okay.
Simple
all
for
right.
me.
Well,
no problem.
The thing was, it all kind of started back when we first – we're from Maryland. We're from the East
okay.
Coast. And we still go back and forth quite a bit. And when we first got out here, we did this show. I came across this show for Disney called Code 9, and it was a one-and-done show. It was a prank show. And it's funny, I knew about it for several months, and I didn't tell anyone until the morning we were doing it. And Julie didn't even know for 2 days into the taping that doing the taping. She found herself on TV without even realizing it. Could have been a marriage breaker, but we hung on there because it was a pretty really really good prank. She had no idea what was going on, and then once you got like a little taste of how the whole production process works and really how easy it can be to find ways, not easy, but if you're just really attentive to what's going on and you're really aggressive in looking for opportunities to basically, for lack of better terms, be on TV.
Yes.
It kind of started snowballing from there. We started finding a rhythm, and we just kept finding ways to get on TV. It was kind of weird. Everyone says to us, like, how did you get on TV? How are you on TV? And you kind of look back on it and you say, I don't even know. I don't even know how I did this, but we just did it. And
being in California, there's opportunities. And then once you
we're in Studio City. We're like at ground zero of, like, you know, where it all happens. And opportunities can be all around you, but it's very hard to land an opportunity. I mean, you fail 99 out of 100 times for the most part, but that one time that you get, you really want to enjoy it and take advantage of it. And it's been really, really fun. Jack, who's also here, he's been in probably over 150 different TV, movie, commercial situations, and he's not even an actor. He just keeps working and working. He's like, at one point, was like the hardest working kid in Hollywood. Like every day he was going out doing something, and then you throw on top of that like the TV, the People's Couch, and things that he does with the family. And of course, Sam and Jack are both full-time college students. So it's been like, you know, a really, really, we're very organized people, I guess, if you can imagine.
We're very organized and we're very responsible. And when I wanted to change the time of the interview, I was like, oh, good, they responded quickly. That makes me good because my booker would get mad at me because he's not used to all this, the craziness. And like I said, well, I got hooked the same way you guys got on TV and acting is basically after my first celebrity interview about 5 years ago when I was doing mostly education, the first celebrity called in. I got hooked, and I slowly but surely changed the format, and now it's just like constantly going after them, constantly looking right for the guests, constantly trying to form, constantly trying to build everything that you're doing. So I see exactly what you're doing now and going for this. Now, Andrew, what is your background? What's your profession? Like in Maryland, so moving from Maryland to California, what was the reasoning to do that?
Well, the reasoning was really to we had a lot of moving pieces. We have two older sons who one has recently graduated from college out in California. One is in his senior year. So they're also out here, not with us, but, you know, part of us. I'm a financial advisor. That's what I've been doing for almost 30 years.
Okay.
So this acting stuff, this reality stuff, this, you know, commercial stuff, it's all in the afternoon or evening. I do my day job. And the really great thing about being a financial advisor on the West Coast is everything runs off of East Coast time. So as long as I get up early and finish my work before, let's say, 1 o'clock when the market closes, as Jack likes to say, I'm a financial advisor in the morning and an entertainer at night, you know? So it's been, the days are long, the days are great. My life seems like I'm living two lives now. But the main reason was to get Sam's career kicked off. So we were a little bit like the cliche family that moves to California to help a child be an actor or support the child be an actor. And Sam, when we look back on it, Sam needed no help at all. He's doing it all on his own. He has his own career path. He's into so many different things. And we kind of like let him go in terms of like helping him. But one of the ways that we were helping him was getting him on TV. I can't think of any better way of presenting yourself to casting directors and production companies by then,
yes,
by other than being on TV. What a great way to present yourself. And it's really helped his career quite a bit.
So I'm understanding some of your kids decided to go to school in California, and that's when you said, we're moving. This is a good
time. Yeah, our oldest son, when we were back in Maryland, our oldest son decided to go to school in Berkeley, and he was also on the baseball team. And I was going to be coming out to California like every weekend to watch the baseball games. And Julie's like, wait a second, I want to go with you too. So Sam and I decided to try it out for a few months on our own out here to see how we go, kind of test the waters. And then we had so much success in the first 3 or 4 months that everyone else followed us out here. And it was great. It was just great. Then our second son decided to go to school in San Diego. And lo and behold, he's now a senior about to graduate with the other one already graduating. So Sam and Jack both go to college in California. And, you know, we're kind of coming Californians, I guess. We live a lot of different lives. One of our lives is doing some reality TV. We're a very diverse, very dynamic group of people. We do a lot of traveling. I guess the one negative to doing a show like The People's Couch is that when you're in season, you really can't go anywhere or do anything because you're in season. But once the season ends, man, we really run hard and go away and do stuff.
Okay, so let's go to this, Julie. You're in The People's Couch. Tell us the story, how this show goes. And like I said, I didn't have any idea till your husband emailed me saying he wanted to come on the show. And then I was just all these different emails, and then I got my team together. And I'm like, oh, this is an interesting thing. But tell us specifically how the show works. You all are on a couch watching television pretty much, right? Your favorite shows.
Yeah.
Well, no, well, actually, what, no. We're actually on a bed.
Yeah, we're the only ones on a bed.
Yeah, it's called the people's couch, and all the other households are watching from their household couches, but we're the only household that actually lies in bed. It's so cool. Like,
pillows.
Yeah, we use neck pillows, and we just have blankets and all these things, and that's what really separates us quite a bit besides our family dynamic is that we're the family. We're basically known. When we go out now, we're at the local grocery store. Hey, there's a family that lies in bed watching TV. That's how we're known. It's kind of interesting. So the whole genesis of how we got into the bed, I don't even remember, but when they came out to audition us, if you will, or interview us, they said, where do you want to do it, on the couch or in the bedroom? I'm like, well, heck, I'm going to lie in bed and do this thing.
Wait.
Here's Julie.
No. What happened was they asked each of us how we like to watch TV. Well, I like to watch TV sitting up in my bed, in my bedroom. And so I said that. And Andrew's like, well, I usually start out watching TV in the family room. And then the kids are like, yeah, I guess we watch TV in the family room. But somehow we all end up on the bed in the bedroom watching TV with Mom. So, like, we all just end up in there, and then they said, well, let's just try it out in the bed. So that's what we did. And then it just kind of stuck and became a thing. And so we are the only family on the show that watches TV in a bed.
Okay, so the dynamic, let's go back to Andrew. Basically, the dynamic with the show is that there are how many families per season on the show?
Well, there's currently – it's been very consistent with 8 different households. So I don't want to say families because we call them households because not we're a family, but some groups of people are friends.
Okay.
So we kind of consider them a household. We're an actual family. Other people are friends that watch TV together. Does that make sense?
Okay.
And then the way the show works is that we all watch the same shows. We all watch the same shows, and then they do a fantastic job of editing out what to make a TV show. So I think there's hours and hours and hours of tape, but only minutes and minutes make it onto the air. There's so many things that we say and do that never make it on because the editors have to kind of match it up with the other households too. And it turns into a very, very funny show. It's really a comedy. But through the editing.
It's definitely a comedy because you put the different shows on, see people's reactions to the different shows.
But the way they do the editing, though, it makes it even funnier because, you know, it's really interesting to see how, like, our family dynamic watches a show differently than a different family's dynamic. Do you know what I'm saying? And it's very funny. When people see something, they see different things all the time, and that's what you really get out of it. And it brings you into the households of other houses that you may never get into and to know exactly what they're thinking and what their process of what they're understanding when they're watching the show. So there's all these different demographics, young, old, middle age, the whole thing,
yes.
White, black, Persian, what else? I don't know. There's like a whole different group of people,
okay.
And we just happen to be the family that lies in bed watching TV with teenage sons.
Now, Julie, tell me specifically also, I guess, what shows during the season? Do you only watch Bravo shows, or they put anything on?
It could be anything and everything. The Alaskan Bush People, anything and everything on Bravo, ABC, CBS, NBC, House of Cards, Netflix, Amazon, like anything, you name it, and it could be on there. The lip sync battle.
Is it almost like a talk soup in a way where they show specific takes from other things?
Very similar.
So they're not. Yeah, okay.
Right.
So that's really weird, Bravo promoting all these other shows and things like that, but they're only putting like a quick clip on and see your reaction. Now, I bet you, Andrew, that one that I think would be probably one that would be interesting is, have they ever done How to Get Away with Murder in any of the episodes?
Yes. They've done all that. How to Get Away with Murder, Scandal. What's the other one?
Shonda.
Yeah, Shondaland. What is it? What's the other one she does? Scandal, How to Get Away with Murder. No, but yeah, so we do everything. We actually thought, Neil, it was going to be like mostly them just kind of like cross-promoting their own shows the majority of the time.
Right.
And I
got
to say that it's been really, really like equitable across the board in terms of, you know, usually every week there's usually one Bravo show that gets aired, but the rest of the shows are not Bravo. You know,
right, that's surprising. But it reminds me of Talk Soup, where Talk Soup on E would just promote other shows, but not the station. So people have to kind of identify. I just could see a clip, Julie, of How to Get Away with Murder and get you guys to blush, and then other people will be like, no big deal at all.
Exactly, exactly. Like Julie gets a little blushy when she sees Matthew McConaughey on the screen or Justin Timberlake. She gets a little bit woozy when they come on. We watch shows like The Voice, competition shows, other reality shows. I think the funnest thing for us is when we watch other reality shows. Because,
for example, the Bravo brand, I'm sure they do the Bravo shows that are really big in things like, especially the Real Housewives, right?
Right. Well, that's Julie's specialty is the Housewives shows. It's kind of funny they're coming out with
I'm friends with one from D.C., Mary Amon's a good friend of mine. When she was on the D.C. Real Housewives, and I've had Leah Black from
Miami. It's funny, they're coming out with a new show, Bravo. It was called The Real Housewives of Potomac, and that's actually our hometown in Maryland.
Really?
It's really, really interesting. It'll be really fun to watch that show to see, like, how either on or off they are on what Potomac is all about. I have a feeling they're going to be pretty off.
Andrew, I didn't know what to expect in this interview, and there's not a lot of information. So People's Couch already aired then, correct? Its season's over or not?
Yeah, the season ended. Season 3, we've done, Sam, how many episodes has it been total? Like 37 or 38 total episodes. And season 3 just ended. We're the original cast members from going all the way back to the test season. And, we weathered the storm of all these years. We've been doing it now for almost 3 years. It's been a long time. It's become part of our,
Our
routine, like our cycle of life. It's like kind of like in our blood. And
so
it got to the point.
So they retained you to be on the show for 3 years then. You've been on all 3 seasons then.
Yeah, all 3 seasons plus the test season, yeah. It's been years now. This has been going on a pretty long time for us, and it's become a big part of our life.
Show,
we actually got to the point where we felt like we had enough fans where we actually started an online web store, and we have products that we show to people, and neck pillows and blankets and coffee mugs and playing cards. We're big into donating to the community, so when someone buys playing cards off of our website, we donate a deck of playing cards to the Children's Hospital of Los Angeles, and we go out there and visit and drop them off, and we meet the kids and the families, and we really try to go beyond. We try to take the little bit of celebrity status we have and not abuse it, but take advantage of it to the point where we can help other people.
And
that, at the end of the day, is better than anything.
Right. I was going to say, it sounds like Bravo lets you do this more than other shows. TLC is really tough on this stuff. I have good friends that are in, litigation right now with because of 90 Day Fiancé. And they're in this process where they were going to get to get on this big show. They were going to get to go on the contract. They didn't get on I'm thinking of the show, it'll come to me in a second, one big show, and then they threw another one of the couples on. So Jason and Cassia Hitch, which are fantastic people, and you guys should utilize each other via social media, Julia, follow them and retweet their stuff and stuff. They've really built a huge following as well. So 3 years, Andrew, and I've never heard of the show, so I'm into some reality, and I did not know of the show, so I can find it on demand and stuff. My wife and I can check this out then.
I think it's easier to find it on YouTube right now. A lot of fans say I don't think it's on Hulu or on demand yet. For some reason, the show is not on there. But YouTube is the place to really go right now. The thing about The People's Couch, Neil, is that it's somewhat of a timely show. It's like we tape. Let's say we tape on a Monday or Tuesday, we tape early in the week. That show comes out like 4 or 5 days later. And what we're watching are shows that people are watching that week. So the shows get a little bit – it's a very timely show. So to watch a show now, you're going to be watching – it's still entertaining for sure – but it's not as timely in terms of what you're watching on TV.
What time are you in the seasons? Are you going to be back for season 4? That's the last question.
Well, we're still waiting to hear about season four. Just like we, you know, every time, in between each season, you're kind of just waiting until you hear from them, you know. And it seems like it's a pretty good situation. There's plenty of fans out there. The show initially was really cool. It was initially slated to be a 30-minute late night show. I think it was at 11:30. 30-minute late night show at 11:30 at night, and it came during season one. I think it was pretty successful. They moved it, not only changed it from 30 minutes to 60 minutes, but they moved it from late night to prime time.
Oh my gosh!
So it's a prime time. It's been at 10 o'clock for a full hour for the last 2.5 seasons. So that's remarkable in itself that the show got, not that the show didn't do well, but that the show became so popular that Bravo was able to move it into a prime time slot for 60 minutes.
Three seasons, and it's helped your boys get a lot of acting gigs, right?
Well,
that's something that
there's no empirical evidence on if it's good or bad for Sam's acting career, but we just know that it was good for us as a family to do while we were doing it. Sam has other things going on.
And if you make money off your 15 minutes of fame, that's great. So, Julie, we need to kind of talk off air. I do a lot of social media branding and see any ways I can help you keep building that promotion and stuff, especially keep your 15 minutes of fame for longer and longer periods of time and utilize Twitter with all these top celebrities and stuff like that. So we'll stay in touch. And Andrew, best place to find all the information. We'll ask Julie. She's supposed to be the social media guru. Andrew, you're too busy going and doing all your financial planning and stuff. Financial advice.
The best place to go is EgberFamily.com, EgberFamily.com. And then you can learn about our story on that website. But, of course, we all have Egber Family has a Twitter. Sam has Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I'll get it to Julie now. But the main place to go really would be www.EgberFamily.com, and that'll direct you all to the other places. Here's Julie.
Hi. I'm Mama Egber all the way. Mama Egber on M-A-M-A Egber on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever you want. We've got Egber Family Facebook fan page. If you go to the website, EgberFamily.com, that gives all of our information there. And it's really fun, easy to navigate, and
fantastic.
What else can I tell you?
Well, thanks.
It's a lot of fun.
Thanks for calling, guys. We'll definitely stay in touch. I will try to reach out to you, see how we can utilize some of our social, our celebrities that are both ways. I think here's a recommendation, really start to try to live tweet other shows of people that you guys watched on the People's Couch. That's a tip I'm giving you right now. And that will drive more traffic to your website. Try to pick things, certain shows, maybe certain reality shows, and start live tweeting and start promoting it, and you will build even larger audience.
That sounds fantastic. Thank you very much. Awesome.
All right, well,
it's been
care.
A pleasure
well,
talking to you. Thank you very much for having us.
Oh, thanks. Well, good luck. I hope to see you up season four, and we'll definitely stay in touch. So take care. Okay.
All right, Neil. All right. Best of luck.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Bye now. All right, look, we're going to be live again today at 5:30.